Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
It's just the most perfect scene here. Mayo fans have let off a flare on the hill to respond. Have let off theirs, so we're pretty much ready to go. Myself and Anthony here right across the afternoon.
And O'Callaghan goes forward. O'Callaghan, he finds the gap. Is there a goal? There it is. Set up. Are in the lead. Colin O'Callaghan with the goal after 1 minute and 27 seconds. And now there's pushing and shoving and everything going on.
People have spoken about this before, about the fact of Cluxham is their quarterback, and he is under immense pressure at the moment, and they literally cannot hardly get the ball out past midfield.
No ball in Andy Bourne. Bourne yet to score. No chance here. Oh, Mayo! It's in the back of the net. Liam Keegan coming from nowhere. The right of that ball into the net. Is it going to be Mayo's day?
Both sides, Anthony, down to 14 men.
Yeah, Richie, wasn't a whole pile in it. John Small came across to a ball. Colin Boyle got a hand pass, kind of turned around, and Small measured him, could see it coming, and kind of shouldered him straight down the middle. You know, did it deserve a red? I don't think so. Maybe a yellow, but then Vaughan came in subsequently and pushed, kind of, you know, a bit of an elbow to the face on Small.
But it's pressure.
Dean Rock hits it off the carpet. The Dubs love it. Oh, it's gone over the bar.
Players on the ground all over the place.
And Dublin are leading. Is there one more chance? We play the 6 minutes. It is all over. It is just not meant to be.
Absolutely.
Dublin 117, Mayo 116.
There's only one place.
We've suffered another All-Ireland defeat. Yeah. It's cruel. It's very cruel. These lads have given us a wonderful, wonderful year, a wonderful journey.
I haven't seen as cruel a defeat in all my time watching football. It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result. They have been an absolute credit to themselves, to their families, to the county.
It's 3 in a row for this Dublin team. Mayo's heart's broken again. Well.
Yeah, same old story for Mayo and for Dublin in many respects. We'll bring you the reaction now. We'll hear from the Mayo camp in a few moments. But first, to Philly McMahon here in the tunnel talking to Oisin Langan about 3 in a row.
It's very special. To win one All-Ireland is amazing, but to win 3 in a row, it's certainly something that we weren't talking about too much this year. It was more about, you know, performing and building in each game. But Jesus, now we can talk about it. So once we achieved it, it's an amazing feeling.
The game itself was helter skelter. Try and explain to someone who's never played senior football what it was like out there.
Oh God, it was a war zone, you know. And again, going back to the management team, they gave us massive preparation for that. And we knew ourselves, look, we're playing a Mayo team that keep coming back every year, like, you know, and you got to give them a huge amount of respect. And I hope we certainly showed the respect we gave them in our preparation up to the game. And that could have went either way today, and thankfully it went their way.
When Dean Rock is standing over that free, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, Jesus, Dean, you missed the first one in the first half. So please hit this. And you're talking to certain people that you're probably not here in the world today, you know, saying prayers. And so, Dean is, if you look at his ratios and in terms of his free taking, he's got a really good conversion rate. And there's no doubt that me and the lads knew that he was going to kick that over. And if he didn't, we're going to go after the next play, which we did.
Yeah, Philly McMahon there. And then Brian Fenton. So Brian Fenton's never been beaten in the Championship still, and he has won his third All-Ireland. So here's Brian Fenton, undefeated in the Championship and also talking in the tunnel with Oisin.
Dublin midfielder Brian Fenton, congratulations on completing the 3 in a row.
Thank you, Oisin. Yeah, I was just saying to the lads there, it's absolutely incredible, to be honest. It's not spoken about in our dressing room about the 3 in a row and the history and all that. We're just going out to win every game, and to win today is just saying to lads, it's just unbelievable. It's
hectic scenes here in the tunnel as players and all that trying to leave. Hectic scenes out there as well. But you kept a cool head.
Yeah, and it's something we do talk about a lot, to be fair, is that composure, the decision making under pressure, and it's worked on in training. And thankfully, you know, when the two lads were sent off, John got second yellow and Donald got his red card, that, you know, the space opened up and it was frantic end to end, score for score. Lee Keegan got the goal, 2 points down. You know, it wasn't looking like it was going to be our day. To be fair to Mayo, they lay into us, and, you know, we'll be healing the wounds now for the next week. But listen, the composure is a big thing we go after, getting the right men on the ball, the right lads taking the right shots at the right time. So thankfully, to get over the line, Dean's free is just incredible. That fella puts in such work off the field, or, you know, on the field but away from us, that it's just testament. He missed an early one, the confidence could have gone, but to stick that free in the last minute or 69 minutes or 70 minutes is just, it's incredible for him. So we're so lucky to have him.
What was the difference in the second half? And it's not like he played badly in the first half, but it just, there was a bit more flow in that second half.
I agree, yeah. I know, we went in a half time and none of our targets were hit. You know, we were poor in the tackle. They were coming through in waves, and we, you know, it's a very honest dressing room. Lads stand up and they say, right, you know, we have 35 minutes. We'll never get that time back again. So to go after big time, to go after 35 minutes in the second half. And yeah, we just, you know, we sort of took the sting maybe out of Mayo. And now, to be fair, it was tit for tat. You know, it could have went either way. So so to come out, as I said, come out the other side of it, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Brian, you're going to enjoy the celebrations over the next couple of days. Luckily, you've had a good career. It's something you've done a couple of times. Try and give us a sense of it. Try and give us a sense of what goes on in the camp. Try and give me a sense of looking out onto that homecoming crowd. And I think it's Smithfield and seeing all that blue.
Ah, that's unbelievable. You know, last year, the year before, we had an incredible crowd in Smithfield. But it's stuff you dream. I went to those homecomings. I was brought there in 95 when Dublin won. Sam McGuire by my mother. And, you know, it's just, it's incredible to be there, to look out over the fans, to go up there into Hill 16 and look up the fans that give everything, travel the length and breadth of the country. And that's genuinely what we do for that inspiration that the fans give us. They're unbelievable. You know, the Mayo fans were there in number today, strength in numbers, and Dublin fans just, you know, completely outnumbered them. So you know, again, just incredible, incredible feeling.
So we'll go from Fenton to his midfield partner, James McCarthy. Probably when Fenton talking there about an honest dressing room and not a very good first half, James McCarthy was one of those players who upped things massively in the second and scored 2 points in the second half to boot as well. A lot of people's man of the match, the official man of the match as well, and a lot of people's player of the year. So here's James McCarthy. He spoke to Oisin at the Gibson Hotel this morning.
Welcome to the Gibson Hotel. It's the morning after the All-Ireland, and James McCarthy, you were named the man of the match as Dublin completed a three in a row. It doesn't really get any better than that as a footballer, I imagine.
No, it's great. I'm very proud to represent the team with that, and just, yeah, it's nice to get the recognition every now and then, I suppose.
Well, that's true. I had a chat with Seddon Connell after the game, and he said he was on the sideline. He had never seen such physicality. Now, he wasn't saying dirt, he was saying physicality. He said, yeah, he could just hear the collisions. Did you get a sense of that? Was it one of the most physical games you ever played in?
You knew early on, she could catch her breath the first 20, 25 minutes, you know, it was just helter-skelter stuff. And like I said, it wasn't, if you weren't willing to go in and take a few hits, you had no right being there. So that's just the type of game it is. And we've no better men on our own side to play like that, and there's no better men on the Mayo side to play like that. So that's just big respect on both sides from that point of view, you know.
So we'll go from the Dubs to Mayo then. Stephen Rochford, I think we've heard already, was very emotional and clearly distraught at full time. And Oisin at Crow Park yesterday got a few minutes with Rochford as well.
Oh, look, it's a fine mixture of disappointment with huge, you know, very, very proud of the group at the same time, but you know, no doubt disappointment. We put a lot into that game. I mean, I said it's, sport is cruel. We played well today. Just Dublin played that 1% better than us, and very deserving of their win. Huge respect for Jim and Stephen and their whole group, what they've achieved. And look, as you said, sport is cruel, but you know, we'll dust ourselves down and we'll do our best, no doubt, in Mayo to change things in 2018.
Stephen, nothing will make up for the loss, but you left it all out there. The guys gave it everything they had, and the game plan was executed. You got it right as management. Is there any consolation in that? Is there any kind of serenity you can take from that?
Not particularly, to be honest, because we came to win the game. And we've come second, so not particularly. As I said, we didn't come up here to get a good second. We came here to be first, but it isn't to be.
In the end, it's narrow margins that decide these things. I suppose Joni got sent off. Maybe it was a bit silly, easy to judge from the sideline. I appreciate the foul at the end that gave the free to Dean Rock. Maybe the goal chance that was saved by Stephen Cluxton. What's your view on those little margins?
Oh, look, it's very fine margins. I mean, you know, David Clark also pulled off one off Paul Mannion. You know, we got a free, hit the post. You know, don't get a free in the nail it. And what, with respect to Dean Rock, was probably a slightly more advantageous angle. But, you know, it's... you know, it is what it is. Sport is cruel.
Is it very frustrating that Donny got sent off, because there's kind of no need for him to do what he did in that incident? And again, I appreciate it's very easy to judge that from the sideline.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm not going to stand here and criticise any of my players. I didn't, you know, see the incident. Thought Donny was having a, you know, really, really strong game. But the referee on the point felt there was a sending off offence in that, so... You know, until I see something different, you know, we have no option but to go with that.
What did you make of the way the game was ref? Because there were some big calls in there on both sides.
Yeah, I think, you know, congratulations to Dublin. They've come out, you know, first. And, you know, these big games, there's big calls. So, look, you just go with it. You come the wrong side of the result. That's... We're not going to stand here now and look back and what decisions could or couldn't have gone against us. I think it's just an appreciation of Dublin three in a row, and the modern era is a phenomenal, phenomenal performance.
Sure is. That's Stephen Rochford speaking to Oisin at full time yesterday. We'll have analysis in a few moments from Billy Joe Padden, Ross Munley in studio, and three-time All-Ireland winner Enda McGinley. But I'm sure you saw the Dubs and Jack McCaffrey in the Sunday game last night having a good old time at their hotel, the Gibson Hotel. The Mayo Hotel, obviously a bit more sombre, but there were some words from Killian O'Connor, which we're going to play you now, and also from Stephen Rochford. So this was the Mayo Hotel last night. They were obviously gathered there and for their own fans and family, and we'll play that and then go into analysis in just a moment.
Fortunately, this is not the speech that I had anticipated making tonight. The day didn't go as I had planned, so excuse me for being a little bit unprepared for this type of speech. There's very little that I can say that can soften or reduce the sadness in all of us as members of the players and the management, and as the supporters of Mayo football can acknowledge. Defeat has visited us once again, and in this very position last year, I spoke about fighting the good fight, hanging in there. Well, today, we did that. All year long, we did that. And for years, we've done that. But what's more, that moving forward, into the future, we're going to continue to fight the good fight.
The dream has not died, just postponed. We'll go home tomorrow with dignity and pride, and we will lick our wounds, but we will rise again. Because this year, like so many other years that have gone before, has shown that Mayo may only be temporarily down, but we are never, ever out. Thank you very much.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
You're welcome back. Dublin 217, Mayo 216. It is a three in a row for Dublin for the first time since 1923. A first three in a row in Gaelic football since Kerry back in 86. We have Ross Munley here in studio. Ross, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We have Billy Joe Padden on the line, and we have three-time All-Ireland winner Enda McGinley with us as well. So we'll start with you, Ross. This was a titanic game. There were moments of huge quality. There was athleticism. There was unbelievable fitness. It was physical. It was tetchy. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, I think it had absolutely everything that you would go to Croke Park hoping to see in an All-Ireland final. Fantastic result for Dublin. Mayo proving again that they're an incredible team, and if Dublin weren't as good as they are, Mayo would certainly have a couple of All-Irelands, but I've said this a couple of times on when I'm here with you guys, Mayo's day will come, and I think even compared to last year, they're that bit closer again, and they almost got over the line yesterday.
At halftime, Billy Joe, are you worried?
Yeah, I'm worried. I think probably regretting some of the chances that they didn't take in that first half, and it kind of reminded me a lot, I think maybe it was the 2012 All-Ireland final where Mayo had done so well and then didn't capitalise on a period of dominance in that first half. But I think as well, you have to acknowledge, and I think the Mayo team wouldn't be so close to Dublin as they have been without knowing that, look, you're going to have to play for the 76, 78 minutes anyway. So even if it was a case that you find yourself 4 or 5 points up, and even, you know, Dublin have it within their capabilities of cutting a lead like that down very, very quickly if you're off the pace for any period of time. So it was always going to be a 75, 76 minute game. But I think that there probably were opportunities in that first half that may have put Mayo in a better position coming out there and coming out in the second half.
And for the purposes of the analysis discussion, if we largely boil it down to a game of two halves, then kickouts were fairly decisive, to say the least. Mayo in that first half cleaned up as much as you can against Stephen Cluxton. They won 6 of 14 kickouts in the first half. The 8 kickouts where Cluxton went beyond the 45-metre line, Dublin only won 2 of them. So it was Parsons in particular and the O'Shea brothers who were dominating, really. And Mayo went long with nearly half of their kickouts, 45% of them. They won 70% of those. Fast forward to the second half and Cluxton goes short every single time and Dublin win 11 of 11 kickouts in the second half and shut off that, you know, that kind of sense of psychological dominance as well as just literal getting the ball in your hands dominance that Mayo had in that first half.
Absolutely, and watching it, you were sort of frustrated because, well, frustrated, I'm supposed to be talking as a neutral, but there's very few people were neutral yesterday, such as Mayo's effect now on people. But watching the first half, they were doing the dream job on the Cluxton kick-out, and you could see the impact of that. We've all talked about it enough in our analysis of coming into other games that if you can crack the Dublin kick-out for even a period of time, the whole Dublin team bees rattled whenever them kickouts aren't working out. And Mayo done that the first half to brilliant effect. It was hard watching, as watching on TV, so it was hard to see how they were doing. Dublin were certainly wanting to kick it long, and Mayo midfield was playing brilliantly, spreading themselves, getting into positions. I think the kickouts were sometimes slightly off. Cluxton was still pinning some excellent ones. But the thing about Stephen Cluxton, most goalies, if you can really, really rattle them, you can upset them for the whole of the game. It was only ever going to probably happen for a period of time, and I don't know what happened at half time. Maybe Mayo sort of accepted, but they seemed to allow a wee bit more space in that Dublin full back line. They didn't push just as hard in it. Dublin were definitely keener to go short in the second half. They weren't looking as much of them short balls in the first half, but in the second half they were more than happy to take them. Yep. And I think they were just looking. Dublin were rattled, and the one thing, like, it was criminal what Tron allowed them to do. Tron allowed Dublin to completely dictate possession and hold possession. In the second half, I suppose, having been as rattled as they were in the first half, Dublin wanted to get on possession, whether that was right in their defence, which I don't think is their first choice. I think they prefer it longer. Stephen Cluxton picking out them runs in round somewhere between the 45 and midfield, them moving players, that's what they prefer. But I think they just wanted possession so they could start dictating, so they could get a foothold in the game. And so they were quite happy to chip the short kickouts, which are very difficult to stop.
Well, that was actually my next point. I was going to throw out to Billy Joe and to Ross. Was there no way? I mean, I don't know if either of you were at the game.
Yeah.
The full picture. Is there no way for Mayo to, I mean, properly press up on Cooper and Fitzsimons and that Dublin full back line and force Dublin into gambling by going long with the kickouts?
Yeah. Well, I think that in the first half Mayo did that, and as a result, Dublin had to go long for theirs. I think on the flip side of it, when you look at towards the end of the game, Clark had to go along with a lot of his kickouts because Dublin were pushing four men up into the full forward line and making it impossible for him to go short. So
yeah. And did Mayo ease off on Dublin in the second half? Did they stop pressing up as high? Like, could they not have stopped? Could they not have cut off Fitzsimons and Cooper to Cluxton in that second half instead of giving them 11 of 11 short kickouts?
Yeah, and you'd wonder, they did, because the Dublin cornerbacks were getting the ball, were getting possession from the kick out in probably 15, 20 yards of space and taking it up the field. That could have been tactical, or it could have been just down to the speed of Cluxton's kick outs. I'd say probably it was a conscious decision to sit back and maybe try and make it a bit more compact around the middle of the field, right. Because they, as you rightly said, they got 11 out of 11 off short.
Yeah.
When they didn't in the first half, it's a complete contrast.
Yeah, as I said, so first half of the 8 long kickouts that the Cluxton goes with, Dublin only win 2 of them. Like, it's domination from Parsons and the O'Shea's, really. Billy Joe, your read on Mayo's attitude to Cluxton's kickouts in the second half?
I don't think it changed that much. I think Enda is right. There was a real reluctance in that first half for Cluxton to go for a short kickout. I was down that end. And his corner backs didn't split wide to make themselves available for the pass. So he hadn't really no options. So it was obviously a plan that they went out with, that they wanted to go long, and it didn't work. And Mayo, did really well around the middle of the field. I think that in that second half, you're probably right. If Mayo maybe had to gamble at some stage to push up a bit higher, but that's a huge risk against Dublin. And I think that Mayo hadn't planned to be that ultra aggressive against the Cluxton kickout. They wanted to be really strong around the middle of the field, as they were, and they wanted to shut down those wide midfield areas where Cluxton gets the ball out to there quickly. And they did do that. And they did do that to good effect in the second half as well. Mm. And I think that maybe, you know, even though Dublin went 11 of 11, I think it's a better situation that they're having to work all the way out. And I know that Dublin ended up with more possession that second half, but I still think that Mayo had more than enough opportunities in terms of being able to get on possession to hurt Dublin. I think what cost Mayo more in the second half was probably not what they did without the ball, but what they did with the ball, and they just didn't get enough scores really to ensure that they could to see it out.
Okay, we're going to pick up on that point in just one moment. Enda McGinley, Billy Joe Padden, Ross Munley staying with us. We're back with a short break, and we'll be with you and the lads right down till 8:30.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. With Air Sport and all the BT Sport channels now free with your Air broadband bundle.
Lots of text coming in. We'll get to as many as we can. Andy and Lucan, you would think Mayo had won given the coverage they're getting. Could have, should have, would have. Yawn, says Andy. And James on the N2 says, why are people so convinced that Mayo will come back and win an All-Ireland anytime soon? They had Meade beaten at the gate in 96. People said the same thing 21 years later, ... We have Billy Joe Padden on the line. We have Enda McGinley, a 3-time All-Ireland winner with us. And we have Ross Munley here in the studio. Billy Joe, let's pick up on the point you made just before the break there about what Mayo did with the ball. And statistically, Dublin had 46 attacks. Mayo had 48. It was very even in many respects this game. The standout statistic is the conversion rate. Mayo converted 59% of their chances. Dublin 67%. And if that doesn't sound impressive, you know, 67% doesn't sound phenomenal. It's pretty close to phenomenal. You go by All-Ireland final standards. Rob Carroll pointed this out today on Twitter. He's a man on top of his stats. So Dublin 67% conversion rate in an All-Ireland final. The highest of the last 19 finals was 60%. So Dublin are 7% better than that. That is a phenomenal return, Billy Joe. This Dublin team, even if they're not playing their absolute best, it's one of the key reasons why they can stay in the game and win games.
Yeah, and it's one of the key reasons why I think they're the best team we've ever seen. And you have to give them credit under severe pressure, playing against an opponent who's almost their equal on the given day. And when those key moments arose, they took their chances. And I suppose even in that, even in throughout the early stages of the game where they were under pressure and Mayo might have been in the ascendancy, when those opportunities came, they still took them. And then again at the second half, you saw people come off the bench like McMenamin and Connolly, and they had the chances they had, they took them as well. And they by no means were the easy opportunities, whereas I think the key Mayo's percentage would have gone up if those two or three easier ones they had in that first half, if they'd gone over the bar, then you're looking at a game that was practically neck and neck. And that's the difference. But I think the things that Mayo have done well in the last couple of games against Dublin and is just the fact that they can break even in possession stats. They, you know, it seemed to me very even in terms of a time in possession of both teams. And I think a lot of that is down to Mayo's skill level and their confidence in their ability to hold on to possession, because Mayo, all right, they went long on some kickouts and did really well there. But on other occasions, David Clark kicked the ball to the cornerback and Mayo had the confidence to work the ball up through the Dublin tacklers, and we know how good Dublin are tackling all over the field. They create turnovers in every line and are really dangerous on a counter attack like that. So that's some of the things that Mayo did well and allowed them to give Dublin trouble. And it's something that they've added to their game, and it was good in the second game against Kerry, where they really retained the ball well.
Yeah.
The problem in that second half was they just lacked that cutting edge as Andy Moore got a bit more tired, and his hamstring went, and you kind of really lost something when Mayo didn't have that outlet.
Because Peter in Mayo says, lads, listening to the comments, sorry, my screen just jumped. Listening to the comments, you would honestly believe that Mayo were the only team to hit wides or have poor shot selection. There's absolutely nothing between these two teams. Nothing, says Peter in Mayo. And like, as I said, Mayo had 59% shot conversion, Ross. So the best we've seen in the last 19 finals is 60%. The problem for Mayo is when you're coming up against a team like Dublin, who are putting away 67% of their chances, Mayo have no room for error. They have to do better than the previous 19 finals, and they're not quite at the level where they need to be to do that.
Yeah, and not far off it based on that stat. But the problem for them is that Dublin took it to a new level yesterday. And coming back to Billy Joe's point, I think crucially, scores for Dublin came yesterday, like on 26 minutes. Donny Vaughan got turned over in full flight by Johnny Cooper. 15 seconds later, Dean Rock is kicking his first point from play. Midway through the 60 minutes, around 66 minutes, Philly McMahon turns over Paddy Durkin, who's bursting through on goal, and it ends up in Dean Rock's second point from play, the fisted point that gives them a little bit of breathing space. So Dublin's ability to counter-attack all throughout this championship has been phenomenal, and their ability to turn over possession deep in their own defence and turn them into scores. And you know, regardless of what sport that you're playing, if you can take shots while you're on a counter attack, they're far easier scored than when you're trying to break down mass defences and so on. And Dublin's work rate gives them an opportunity to break at pace. And for me, that's probably one of the reasons yesterday that they were able to increase that shooting percentage, that scoring percentage, because when you do break down the field, like that second point, that Dean Rock's second point, the fisted point, that came from Ball was dispossessed, as I said, by Philly McMahon. Connolly gives an unbelievable 35-yard pass at the outside of his boot, in over the top, and makes it easy for Dean Rock to convert. Yeah. He was one-on-one. He could have possibly gone for goal. So they're the small things that make Dublin this incredible team at the moment.
Yeah, and can you give us your assessment of the Mayo forwards? Like, so we're talking about Dublin, and this is like historically high level of shot conversion in an All-Ireland final. And people say of Mayo, and it irks Mayo players and management when you say it, but that Mayo don't quite have the forwards to win in All-Ireland. Like, you know, they're right there. They're as good, really, as anyone's been in All-Ireland finals previously. We've talked about Dublin taking it to the next level. How poor, otherwise good, excellent were the Mayo forwards for you?
The Mayo forwards, compared to nearly all other teams at county level and that have won All-Ireland over the past year, are a very similar unit. You talked yourself that the highest previous was 60%. Mayo were sitting at 59%. So their forward line is very good by inter-county standards. They have a couple of key men that are in top form, particularly Andy Moore this year, Jason Doherty. Essentially, Killian O'Connor probably didn't have his best of years, and now he kicks in some great scores, but he also misses some. But they have top quality forwards. The difference is they're playing against Dublin that don't, nearly every other county team, my own team included, the Kerry team we came up against, and nearly any other All-Ireland winning side that you can think of, they will have two or three marquee forwards, this phrase that gets bandied about. But them are the men that, as a player, in the crunch times, you get them, you know that they will hit the target. The opposition knows they really have to target them. That sometimes creates a wee bit of more space for other players. The difference for Dublin is they have 10 potentially marquee forwards that if two or three, and yesterday Dublin's forward line, actually plenty of them had quite quiet days yesterday, but suddenly Mannion stood up and had a huge game. James McCarthy came through from midfield, had a huge game. Mayo's midfield, Seamus O'Shea, Tom Parsons, neither of them are particularly great finishers. That's against Fenton and James McCarthy. So even if you shut down the Dublin forwards, which is very hard because every one of them are shooters, they either throw on a couple of top quality forward subs who would be star forwards on any other team, and then they've got two shooters in midfield. So it's the sheer breadth of numbers. Mayo's forward line is a great forward line, and I would absolutely, as a Mayo player, you'd be disgusted this keeps getting thrown up. It gets thrown up because well, I suppose Mayo traditionally in the past struggled in that regard. I think it's a fairly lazy conclusion to draw. Yes, they missed chances yesterday, but look, as you know, that stat is actually a great stat, that previous to this, the highest sort of normal conversion rate is 60%. They had 50, that's the highest in All-Ireland finals over the last, 19, 20 finals, you're saying? Yes, 59%.
Yeah.
And that's against a Dublin defence that was listening to them yesterday, and that game was played at ferocious pace. So it's hugely commendable what they've done. It's just the problem is they come up against a team who, in particular, as an attacking threat, possess a level of quality that is so even, spread right across the team, and extends right deep into their bench that we have not seen in the game before. And it's that level of threat that it is just so hard to keep on top of all of the time. And suddenly that means instead of the normal 60%, you need to be hitting every single chance that you're hitting, and that's almost impossible.
Yeah. Kieran Cunningham, listening on Twitter, points out the last 15 minutes of the replay final last year, Mayo were without Moran, Vaughan, Keegan and Doherty. End of the game yesterday, no Moran, no Vaughan, no Doherty, no Boyle, no Higgins. And we've talked at length about the fact that this Mayo squad lacks a bit of depth, Ross. Like, to what extent did Dublin underperform is a question we were toying around with earlier on, and maybe that feels a bit unfair on Mayo, who clearly get in their faces and make life miserable for them. But from Jim Gavin's team selection onwards, did Dublin put their best foot forward yesterday?
Personally, I don't think so. I would have started Connolly. I think the game came in the latter stages of the game came down to pure brilliance by Connolly. And just coming back to Enda's point on this, people to stand up and be counted. When the game was in injury time yesterday, Connolly had a shot off his left foot that ended up going wide. From the kick out, James McCarthy, he obviously wanted play it on. Connolly made his way across the field 10 seconds after kicking the ball wide, got on the ball, soloed through, and he was the one that was fouled for Dean Rock's winner. So you have somebody like him who's prepared to stand up, doesn't care that he's kicked wide in injury time in an All-Ireland final, gets on the ball and effectively wins the game. I know Dean Rock struck an unbelievable free, but Connolly was the one who dug deep, got himself on the ball and put Dublin in a position to win a game. And it comes down to having brilliance like that. And we all talk about his talent and his ability to get scores, but when you see that determination and that resilience to put a mistake behind him and effectively win the game for Dublin, they're the things you need to get over the line in an All-Ireland final.
Yeah. Talk to us about that point, Billy Joe. Dublin, good, bad, indifferent by their own standards. And I appreciate it. You can't separate Mayo from that conversation. Like Kieran Kilkenny, you know, a case in point, against Tyrone, they stand off and Kilkenny has 62 possessions and runs riot, really. Against Lee Keegan, Kilkenny gets the ball 8 times. It's kind of like a staggering difference. So I appreciate you can't separate Mayo from this question, but like Jim Gavin picking on O'Gara as opposed to Connolly and various other decisions. Talk to us about Dublin.
I think that it's so totally unfair. And I didn't like Jim Gavin's comment, you know, but in the lead up to the game, that they didn't play well last year in both games. I think you can't look at a game like that over two games and not take the opposition into account. And it's just Mayo set up better than any other team to play Dublin. They pose the most challenges for Dublin. And I think that Jim Gavin, when you go back and look at the tape and he will review it, I think he got his team wrong. I think it was probably simplistic to think that O'Gara, because Mayo have trouble with Targum, which they do, that was automatically going to work. And Mayo dealt with it pretty well. And
it was Harrison really on O'Gara, wasn't it?
Yeah, and O'Gara got a point, but they just didn't get enough ball in there. And it kind of looked like it affected the rhythm of the Dublin attack. He's a different type of player and is more used to coming off the bench and making an impact than he usually does. But I think as well, though, in saying what Dublin do, like Dublin were incredibly impressive, and we spent a long time talking about the stats and their conversion rate. But the thing, we can talk about and we have talked about all the great players they have on the bench and as strong as they are. But the thing that stood out for me yesterday, and it's the sign of their greatness for me, is that, like, in whatever, 6 close games against Mayo, a team that are just slightly inferior to them, never has their concentration dropped to a situation where they've allowed Mayo to win that game. They've been so solid over the field. It's been somebody different in nearly every opportunity. Last year was Cormac Costello coming on and doing something. As Ross pointed it out there with Connolly and Dean Rock there. And to me, that's the absolute most impressive thing. They are so calm in those latter stages of games, and they're used to winning these close games, and their record is absolutely unbelievable. And I think that that's probably what separates them from, you know, any of the other great teams we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years anyway.
Yeah. Did Aidan O'Shea have a great game, good game, indifferent game? There was like a lot of discussion about this on the Sunday game, Ross, last night. Like, most possessions of the entire match, it's Aidan O'Shea by a distance. He got in the ball 41 times. He only lost the ball once. He kicked that wide as well, but he lost the ball once out of 41 times. Next guy to get in the ball was Fenton 30 times, Parsons 26, McCarthy and Lee Keegan 23. So Aidan O'Shea on the ball a huge amount. He won four kickouts. He had two assists. Didn't score. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you Brawley, for instance, last night saying didn't think he had a good game at all, quiet. Other guys saying he had an absolutely brilliant game. Talk to us about O'Shea yesterday.
Yeah, I thought in the first half he was very influential. It was a very interesting battle between himself and James McCarthy for the 70, whatever, 5 or 6 yeah. or 8 minutes in the end up. Probably Aidan was more dominant in the first half, and I think McCarthy's ability to play off the break and play off the shoulder and kick the 2 points in the second half probably propelled the level of his performance, kicking 2 points in the second half when Dublin needed somebody to stand up and be counted.
Mm.
There's small margins. I think it's probably Aidan O'Shea's best performance in an All-Ireland final. Had he kicked that score with the outside of his boot, again, it was a brave shot to take. They would have been 2 points clear and very much heading in the right direction. So I personally thought they were very... It was a very tight call between the two of them yesterday. O'Shea definitely dominated first half. His ability to win some kickouts, but also to get on the breaks and to... He was able to bat down a couple of kickouts to his own half-back line, which was crucial. But you can't take away from McCarthy adding to the scoreboard in the second half, and he did it exceptionally well.
Yeah, and how did McCarthy manage to turn that around?
I think, bottom line, the big thing was he wasn't going to beat Aidan in a physical battle out around the middle, and Aidan probably shaded that. But the game isn't won or lost there. The game is won in the ability to hurt the opposition in terms of attack. And James McCarthy always had the benefit of speed, and I think the longer the game went on, the more that speed and the more the fitness actually came into it. And it was, I remember coming up against Dara O'Shea and Trones midfield, certainly you couldn't compete with Dara in there. He was just so, so good. But the hope was that come the latter stage of the game, you might get a wee run on him. And that's what you were sort of holding out for. I think James McCarthy yesterday, I think he had a bigger impact on the game, even though Aidan O'Shea had much more possessions. Aidan O'Shea had a good game. Like, you can't control everything as a player, but James McCarthy, bottom line, he done more damage, and that was damage that you could have seen coming, because it was a wee bit of a mismatch in terms of the sheer speed of the two men and in terms of the ability of the both men to get forward. I think it was a pity from Mayo's point of view that Aidan O'Shea didn't get on the front foot a wee bit more and didn't get attacking into that Dublin defence, because whilst Mayo stuck with Dublin for long periods, particularly in the first, up until Lee Keegan's goal in the second half, Mayo were not producing a huge attacking threat there, and they were struggling to make inroads. And part of the thing we were talking earlier about kickouts, Mayo were sort of camped in their own half, breaking out a wee bit with sporadic attacks, but they weren't getting properly up the pitch, they weren't pushing right up, or they weren't really driving into the heart of the Dublin defence. And Aidan O'Shea could have potentially done that maybe a wee bit more. He got on the possessions a lot, but it was a wee bit like Kieran Kilkenny's ridiculously high possession counts. A lot of the time it was passing the ball on, but Mayo, where Kieran Kilkenny can do that for Dublin and pass it on to other boys that might drive through and hurt a wee bit more, people like James McCarthy, Mayo needed Aidan O'Shea to do both, get on the ball, but also to try to drive through and to hurt a wee bit more. So I think in the balance of it, he had a good game. He got on the ball a lot. He put in a huge, huge effort, as did the rest of the Mayo team. But as with the whole game, James McCarthy hurt him more by getting the scores.
Billy Joe, this was also a very difficult game to referee, for obvious reasons. I mean, like, more so than the two games was that last year, the final and the replay last year, there was a lot more pulling, dragging, body checking going on, and it was happening all the time from minute one, really, and it culminates really, I mean, I don't think either side is more guilty than the other. It culminates in, it seems, a GPS being thrown in the direction of Dean Rock as he's trying to kick that free, and then finishes up after that with basically every player inside the 45-metre line wrestling on the ground as Clark's trying to take the kick out. Dublin clearly knew what they were doing, and you know, it puts to bed any notions Jim Gavin has of Dublin being the great white hope for uncynical play. I mean, he must never be allowed to say that again. Like, Kevin McStay in The Times writes about that finale as well, and he makes a good point going forward. One aspect, he says, of the finale that struck me was, and I think the referee had a very decent game under difficult circumstances with the amount of blocking and holding off the ball, that the ending of major games is totally unsatisfactory. There are no angels here. Mayo would have done the same if a point up, and he emphasised that Mayo would have done the same. But there are fellas putting their arms around defenders and taking the yellow, and that's with a minute off the clock. Overall, a lot of holding on both sides, but the closing minutes of big matches are becoming just a blizzard of black cards and yellow cards. This is a cultural thing, Billy Joe. I don't know what a referee on his own can do, but there is no doubt now that in big games, and to use Kevin McStay's word, the unsatisfactory. Whichever team is a point up, it is just all out. Let's just shut down the game.
Yeah, no, and you're right. It is not, no Mayo or Dublin, no one team was any worse than the other yesterday, and it starts from the word go. And I think it's something that's in the game now more than when I played. There is way more contact off the ball. And this is just even at the early stages in games as well, that there's more pulling and dragging going. I think the only ref to actually look ahead of the play and give frees is David Goff. He is the only ref that I see that actually gives a free as the ball has been played into the full forward line, where he feels there's too much contact with the forward and the defender in that stage. And I think that's a second referee would help defenders there and would result that there'd be less of that physical contact in terms of body checking and holding that goes on off the ball. But you're right, that the last 10 minutes of games is absolutely littered with that stuff. And I don't know what the solution is to it, other than I think a regime or a culture of officiating has to change, you know, for every minute of the game, and that this contact off the ball is not permitted. And I think you'd have a more attacking game, because I think forwards would get a bit more space if they weren't having to wrestle themselves out of a hold every time to just make a run at the ball. And that to me is the biggest problem with Gaelic football at the minute, before you even go talking about any other rule changes. And it does make the spectacle. It can be extremely frustrating for fans as well that are watching that. But I think Kevin is right as well, that if Mayo were a point up and they found themselves with Stephen Cluxton in the kick out, I think they'd probably have done the exact same thing.
Yeah, 100%. Ross, I'm sure you'd prefer a game with less wrestling. It's impossible for a referee to find any kind of natural justice out there with so much of it going on that he sees sometimes and doesn't see. I mean, like, Enda McGinley and Tyrone started all this. I don't know how we get rid of it.
And I was on the receiving end of some of it. No, but I think, to be fair to Joe McQuillan yesterday, that last, from Dean Rock's winner, effectively.
Yeah.
2 minutes later, the ball still hadn't been kicked out.
I mean, it was WrestleMania broke out.
Yeah, but interestingly, and this is a disappointing thing from the Mayo point of view, in that 2 minute period, Kieran Kilkenny gets a black card. So it's Dublin are down to 13 men, and still they don't get a short kick out off the tee. It ends up going out over the sideline. That's probably the most disappointing thing in the last 5 minutes from a Mayo perspective.
Because you figure if Clark had found his man, there would have been enough time to work his score. Why is it not a free? So Kilkenny gets a black card. Should it not be a free from where that happened? Or is it right that the free kick or that the kick out happened as was going ahead?
No, someone asked me that earlier on there, but I think it was at All-Ireland semi-final or final a couple of years ago where Shamie O'Shea got a black card for an off-the-ball tackle on Johnny Cooper over under the Cusick stand, and play went and he just came back and black carded him after. So
okay.
I'm not fully sure, but
either way, Clark would feel he should have found a man.
He'd be disappointed, but again, the stat that of the Mayo players not finishing the game, probably if Keith Higgins is on the field, he's going to get a short kick out there. He has the experience and the drive to make that happen, especially with the numerical advantage. And I think Clark probably got caught between two minds. There was one Dublin player in between the two Mayo defenders out under the Cusick stand, and unfortunately he didn't hit either.
A few last texts as we round this off, lads. Sean and Drumcondra, anyone going to mention O'Gara's indiscipline? Shocking stuff, should have been sent off. I think a few people texting about that. Peter in Dublin, very little said on the impact of McCaffrey's injury. A few people texting about the bench, Billy Joe, and you look at the games over the last year, so the three games, the two finals last year and the final this year. Malachy Clerkin had it today in the Irish Times. Dublin bench, 8 points. Mayo bench, 1 point. over the last five games. Dublin bench 211, Mayo bench 5 points. Ultimately, we talk about conversion rate, we talk about everything else. Mayo are going to have develop a bigger squad to beat Dublin, Billy Joe, over the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, with six substitutions, Dublin have a huge advantage because of the quality of their squad as a whole. I think as well, I think Mayo probably feel a bit sensitive about the quality of their bench, but I think it would be the same on a lot of other counties as well that would be playing Dublin, that they wouldn't have the strength in the bench. You know, if there's one thing that maybe Stephen Rochford should have done, it was when he was taken off, particularly the Andy up front and Jason Doherty and Kevin Glocklin, he didn't really bring on shooters, and he might have just been as well to bring on somebody like Alan Dillon there who might have got an outside shot. Mm. But you can't really complain about what Stephen Rochford, because as you pointed out earlier in the show, you know, he got so many things right.
Yeah.
About yesterday. But I think you're right, it's very difficult with the six substitutions, and Mayo are going to have to rely on some of those players being able to come in and make a bigger contribution. And, you know, Conor Loftus had been able to do that in some of the games this year, and he's very excited for him. We're all looking forward to seeing how he develops. And he just, unfortunately for him, he wasn't able to make the impact that probably Mayo or the Mayo forward line needed in those latter stages of the second half.
And a final word to you, pretty much, and we'll talk at some stage in the show this week about Dublin dominance, and people are talking about whether or not it's good for the game, and we'll discuss the whys of that and how it'll be addressed in a way that keeps everybody happy. But Dublin's greatness, Enda. So Kerry, in that 12 years, 75 to 86, won 8 All-Irelands. Dublin are now at 5 in 7. So it is entirely conceivable that Dublin will win 3 All-Irelands, given the age profile of this team. 3 All-Irelands in the next 5 years. And that would put them very much level with the great Kerry team. And it's very conceivable Dublin will win 4 All-Irelands in the next 6 or 7 years. So we are looking at history in the making here. Is there anything to stop this Dublin team realistically over the next 3 or 4 years?
It's no team really is there in a brilliant position to take them down. Mayo are well over this hill compared to Dublin. Most of Mayo's key players are all older, and they're going to be a further year older next year. Kerry, likewise, some of their best performers this year were their oldest players. Now they have a pretty exciting minor going to join in next year, but again, it'd be hard to be expecting Clifford to be suddenly making Kerry a threat. But Kerry, because of their mentality, are going to be thereabouts. Trone are going to have to maybe look at their whole style of play. They probably have the mentality and the setup to get there, but I'm not sure they have the out-and-out talent at the minute, and they are going to have to go through, I believe, a system change anyway. So, no, the horizon is looking pretty clear from a Dublin point of view. The big thing for me is most teams, as they get older, they start to slow a wee bit, and the sheer speed goes, but I don't know whether it's on purpose. But one of the key things, I remember watching a documentary on Usain Bolt above all things, and they were talking about his world record and could he beat it again, and they were saying, no, physiologically you start slowing down from, I think it's maybe 22 or 23 years of age, you start getting slower. And in football, you make up for it by maybe strength or maybe experience or maybe them things. Dublin have massive quality of players coming through, but on the bench yesterday was all your slightly older players, your Flynns, your Brogans, your Magildar McCauleys, even Jared Connolly. And instead he was throwing in these younger players who have sheer speed. So it's that ability of Dublin to keep their pace and keep their fitness at the top end. Mm. And then use their older players to win out games in the last 20, whereas most teams with that quality of player, you have to flog them to death from the start in the games, and then you throw in your rookies maybe at the end, which is really the other way about, and Dublin have the luxury to do that. So, look, if absolutely, the odds are stacked against them. The only thing is, can they keep that massive hunger? That's their biggest challenge. That's the biggest testament to them at the minute, because their sheer will to win that game yesterday was massive, given the fact that they had plenty of medals in the back pocket, and nobody was going to doubt them really as a team, even if they did lose it narrowly. Yeah. They just refused to be beaten. Can they keep that up? Jim Gavin seems to have them. The players seem to have this almost all-black mentality. And if they choose to keep winning, it's going to be exceptionally difficult to beat them.
Yeah. Very last word to you then, Ross. And actually, before I ask you the last question, I think just because it would be insane not to... We can't talk about it, but Chris Barrett had a phenomenal game yesterday, and lots of Mayo players did as well as Dublin players. I've never seen so many dispossessions from a man as Chris Barrett yesterday. And on the Mayo theme, Ross, can they realistically come back next year, a year older? You've got Higgins going 33, you've got Moran going 34. There's nothing to suggest the squad is going to develop massively. And yet, I didn't know a lot of people wouldn't have expected them to be within a point of Dublin midway through this season either.
Yeah, well, if you wind the clock back 12 months, losing after a replay, everyone said all those same things about Mayo last year, and they had their chance and they didn't take it. I honestly believe that they were closer yesterday. They were almost getting over the line. I think I take Enda's point completely on board. Dublin are a powerful team. They could go on and create even more history, but I think Mayo have a lot to be confident about going into the new year. It's going to take a long time to get over that, but I believe they were closer than they have ever been yesterday, and I think they will regroup. And why not? If you were a Mayo player, there's a challenge there for you to get back into, to get your head down and try and find those inches and maybe find that small thing, one player or two players that are going to get you over the line the following year. And as a player, if you're not thinking like that, then there's no point in being in inter-county football.
Billy Joe, are you worried they've just missed their chance?
Look, I thought they were done last year. I thought last year was their chance and they'd come back and surprised us. Now, the one thing you would say about this Mayo team and the whole backroom setup is that they just planned their season to peak in August, and that's why they're so vulnerable in Connacht. And they probably will be vulnerable in the National League and in Connacht again next year, and they'll plan for the Championship. But they'll be very dangerous. If they can find themselves in the All-Ireland final, quarterfinals, they're only going to get stronger at that stage. And they have the experience to go on and beat many teams there. And I suppose just the one point on Chris Barrett, he's a clubmate of my own in Balmullet, and he's, you know, like his performance was exceptional in terms of just being able to defend one-on-one against some of these quality Dublin forwards. And I think that that's something that other teams will have to look at, that there's going to be periods in games where you're going to have to just be a good one-on-one defender and not always rely on the sweeper. And I think that when more teams accept that, I think they'll put up better challenges against Dublin.
Okay, lads, we'll have to leave it there. Enda McGinley, Billy Joe Padden, Ross Munley, thanks for coming into the studio. We have got Chris Kamara and Jeff Stelling on the way for you, no less.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.